Welcome, everyone. This is Marcy Newman, the host of Heart Shift Radio, and I am here today with Reverend David McGinley out of Canada. And Reverend McGinley is here on a very special mission. It is a mission of, I think, really helping this entire community at the IANS conference to connect their hearts with their heads. This conference, as you may have heard on some of the other podcasts, are very much involved with the connection of spirituality and science, which is fantastic. But Reverend McGinley's experience is one that goes beyond the science laboratory. It goes beyond the laboratories that many of the researchers are using and goes into the laboratory of human life. And so, first of all, welcome.
Thank you. I feel
so privileged and honored to be sitting across from you. As I heard about your work, I could feel my own heart expanding and just sort of reaching towards you. So when you agreed to this interview, I was so very grateful.
I'm really honored, excited to chat with you.
Yeah, I am too. So I'd like you first to tell our audience a little bit about yourself, what brought you to this place in your life, and then I'd like to chat about what actually brought you to the conference.
Sure.
You've traveled a long way.
Yeah. So I'm a Lutheran minister from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Eastern Seaboard of Canada. And I'm an interfaith staff chaplain integrated with the cancer program, intensive care, and palliative care at the city hospital, a major hospital in Halifax. So my job is the greatest honor of supporting people and connecting to their own strength and more than anything, using the crisis of cancer and illness to amplify their love and evolve in love, especially when they're reaching the end of life. I walk with them to the edge of immortality, and I'm familiar with that territory and that journey because I also have had cancer four times. And one of those times I had a near-death experience. So
you've been to the brink and back.
I feel like I touched my toe into the realm of wonder. And I wanted to keep my feet planted there, but was told, as many are, that I had to come back. So imagine a giant, a kind giant. Because I'm 6 feet, 8 inches tall.
I was just going to say, because there's a very tall man standing in front of me, I can well imagine, yes.
Right? And so
tall and handsome, I might say.
Well, thank you very much. That helps because when I walk into a patient's room, a chaplain walks into your room and you have cancer, what are you going to think? Oh, my goodness, it must be really bad.
Yeah.
They sent the God guy.
Yes.
Right? He's come to check my ticket and see which way I'm going, which is not what I'm there to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, while I do loom over the bed, I'm not sore on the eyes, right?
Right.
So you sit down quickly and you lean in and with deep curiosity and genuine compassion, just ask, how are you doing? This is scary. We can help. Because that's not just a body riddled with disease in the bed. That is a luminescent, unique expression of the divine love of the universe. And he or she will not end if that body fails. It is wondrous what we are headed towards. There's actually no need to be afraid. Ironically, dying is rough, but death is the safest thing you could ever experience.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember that.
So you talk about the cancer experience as being opportunity. Opportunity for growth, opportunity for expansion, opportunity to start to shift. I call this the heart shift, by the way. I call this an actual shift in the vibrational frequency of the heart that allows us to both perceive and feel and experience our lives differently. So every experience differently.
That's it. Imagine, like, don't waste the crisis. Use the crisis to deepen your love, expand your humanity, and even connect to your immortal nature.
So when you first approach patients with this intention in mind, are you often exposed to their immediate rejection, or do you find that they lean in and say, please help me?
I do get the rejection because I'm a hospital chaplain. Mm-hmm. So they think that it's about the traditional religious practice, and I will support them in that practice. Mm-hmm. I will pray with them. I can help with sacraments and other rituals. But a lot of people, an increasing number these days, say, oh, I'm not religious. I'll say, that's okay. It's not about the belief. It's actually about the unfinished love stories that you have with yourself as well as others. And the realization that you are love incarnate. So I tell them, that's okay. We don't even need to talk about God. Tell me about the love.
It's so beautiful. I mean, I can feel my own heart responding to this. The question that came up into my mind is, were you involved in this work before you had your own NDE experience? And by the way, for our first-time listeners, NDE is a near-death experience.
I was not involved intentionally in this work. You can look back and see how your life has led to it.
Of course.
I had my near-death experience, fortunately, in a hospital, in a chapel.
In a chapel.
Now, I put a lot of people to sleep on Sunday.
Hopefully it's not your specialty.
Right. But it's no good when it's the minister who collapses.
Wow.
Right? So my cancer is called pheochromocytoma. And this, unlike most cancers, is dangerous not because of its metastases, it's spreading out, but dangerous because it's filled with a Molotov cocktail of chemicals that will explode and kill you immediately as soon as your adrenal gland kicks on.
Whoa.
So the slightest release of adrenaline from pain or fear, anxiety, or from pleasure triggers a tumor to explode with norepinephrine and dopamine, and most people die immediately. You have about 5 seconds warning.
This is amazing.
I've had this cancer 4 times.
Oh,
I'm so lucky to be alive. The first time I was 17 years old, and it was in my bladder, so the metabolites were flushed out in my urine, and I didn't have the anxiety reaction. But the second one, 10 years later, caused heart racing, sweating, what looked like anxiety attack. And we didn't know that it was releasing these chemicals. From the first pathology report, it looked like a benign tumor. So every time I got up into the pulpit, I was taking my life in my hands.
Oh, my God.
And then I would get anxiety attacks. Sometimes I couldn't do a sermon. And I thought, I must be a coward. Certainly, I can't step into this.
Started to beat yourself up.
I did. And then one day in a hospital chapel on my internship, I collapsed from the tumor. And it's a long way down for me. I mean, the concussion is stunning.
I bet.
I was out before I hit the floor. And I found myself on a grassy hill. I could feel every blade of grass that was moving. The light was coming from everywhere. The colors were saturated beyond belief. And at the top of that hill was a tree with its branches achingly drinking in that light. And I wanted to run to that tree, because if I saw what was on the other side, I'd never come back. I have never been so happy, ecstatic, expansive, joyful, filled with love and bursting with vitality. I have never been so whole and complete in all my existence here. We have heard at this conference of how the brain is this reducing valve that shrinks consciousness into the material form. But there you are expanded back and no longer straining against or suppressing any aspect of your conscious self. You are whole and you are home. Oh, it was beautiful. And there was someone there beside me. I didn't turn to look at him, but he was a masculine figure. Now, being a Christian minister, maybe he was Jesus, certainly embodied those qualities, but it doesn't matter who. It was a being of astonishing power, authority, gentleness, compassion, love, and humor. And it was like I dropped into the middle of a casual conversation, and he said, "It's good to see you, David." And I said, "It's great to be here. I'm so happy."
Yeah.
And I was elated. And he said, "Yes, it's really good to see you." And I kept saying, "I'm home, I'm home, I'm home." I was like a 10-year-old child at Christmas. And he said, "Yeah, and you're doing good work. Things are going well," which you wouldn't imagine if you were looking at my body as my wife was and the hospital team were. I was out for 15 minutes. I didn't know they were resuscitating or trying to revive me. And I said, "I'm home. Let's go. Let's run. Let's go. Top of the hill." And he said, "You can't go there. You can't go there because actually you have to go back. You have a lot more work to do." I said, "No, no, you won't do that. Come on, you can't do that." Oh, that was hard. He said, "Look, things are going well, but you have a lot of work to do. And we'll be with you. You won't be alone. We'll be with you, but you can't stay here. We'll see you later." I remember just saying, "No." Boom, back in my body. The density of flesh, the pull of gravity, the sluggishness of thoughts, the poverty of words, the fractured self. I shrank into this form, and I grieved. And then I realized what happened. And so I was embarrassed. And I just said,
a bit shocking.
Shocking.
Yeah.
What do you do when you move from this reality, which is all you've known, to one of such expansive consciousness and then are shrunk back into this? The existential dissonance is so severe that, like most people, I buried it into my subconscious and I told no one.
And that is a very common report.
I left it there. It percolated in me for years. Back at the hospital, they wrapped me in a blanket, gave me orange juice when they were confident I was fine. They sent us home and I crawled into bed and grieved. I didn't tell anyone. But
it also was percolating.
It was percolating. And it was doing things.
Yeah.
And through the years, it surfaced again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And I doubted it, as most people do, and told myself, "Oh, it was a dream. It was hallucination. It was hypoxia. It was whatever."
I can relate. Totally relate. Yeah. I experienced the same thing. I must have made this up.
But I couldn't shake it.
Yeah.
And the effects that it has had on my life. Now I realize, but now I'm 53, and then I was 28.
Yeah.
Yet it feels like yesterday. Mm. I feel it with the same emotional intensity.
Can you reclaim it?
Oh, it's right there.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that love is there, and I know those guides are there.
Yeah.
You know, and as a Christian, I know my Lord is holding and guiding and still saying to me, "You're doing good. You're doing the work we sent you back for." However, I did resist. I procrastinated. But then I went into the church, had a parish for 10 years, and then moved into hospital chaplaincy and was so grateful for that because now I feel at home.
So how has your work changed? How can you minister to these others who are also facing cancer, their own mortality, their fear, and their own grieving process that is actually active during that whole process?
The key in ministering to these people is not in what you say, but how you are present.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of your presence determines the quality of the encounter with them. And a great deal of work is done in just intuitively knowing what the experience is like, was for you, their experience is slightly different because it's theirs, holding the space with compassion.
Mm.
Compassion is not some wishy-washy kindness. Compassion, I love from the Buddhist teaching, is to be a warrior of compassion, a bodhisattva, right? Strong back, soft front, able to go into the storm of mortality and suffering and keep your keel deep in the water. And through the quality of your presence, you can transform the experience with others, staff included. Now, I'm not consistent in that. You do not come back from a near-death experience enlightened or consistently skilled. You stumble along sometimes much more than before.
Mm-hmm.
But when you reconnect with it and trust that love which is shining through everyone and you, you can relax because you discover something important. When we're deeply loved, we feel safe.
Yes.
And when we love deeply, we feel courage and clarity.
And can love ourselves in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you go
and
in
and then
there,
extend that love to others.
To others who are weeping and grieving. Well, honor that grief. Grief is the price you pay for love and tied into the attachment.
Yeah.
Then to stand over the body of someone dying, intensive care, palliative care, family gathered around, you can say the prayers with so much more than just ritual or reading from a book, right? I don't use the book anymore. I'll say...
You just use your heart.
Totally. Totally. Because the words, we've been promised, and that's true. They flow through. They'll be given to you. You stand by the body. Let's say it's Joe who's dying. I'll say, let's join hands. Let's connect in with Joe. Let's pour our love into his heart. Take a few deep breaths. Just be quiet for a moment. And then you say a prayer. Thank you, God, for the gift of Joe, for how your light's been shining through him even when he's been a recalcitrant, difficult man. He's been a beautiful gift to this family, and it's so hard to let him go. May he be able to release his body with gratitude and his life without regret.
That's beautiful.
And Joe, if you can hear us, know that you are always tied to those you love because God is love. Watch over your family as you can. Try not to freak them out. Behave yourself. But you are off on a great adventure.
Yeah.
And you will be profoundly missed. But we'll see you on the other side. Oh, that prayer.
Oh, my God.
Heals hearts and helps people use grief in a beautiful way. What an honor. And I get paid to do this.
It's amazing. Really, your ability to be so present and to be so clear in the truth of it all. I happen to have overheard part of your conversation with another person that we actually both were interviewing. And I understand that you don't really limit yourself to teaching under these circumstances. You have a website?
I have a website, davidmcginley.com. It's an odd last name.
Would you spell that, please?
M-A-G-I-N-L-E-Y.
Okay.
Small g.
Okay.
davidmcginley.com. So there's resources and materials there for healthcare providers.
Fabulous.
Nurses and doctors, as well as...
We all need them.
And for patients. There's interviews. There's some of my photography, which I use to process... the experience of being immersed in suffering and all the profound beauty. I had to find a way to support people more effectively. Cancer rates are increasing. They have moved up. When I began, it was 1 in 4 people. The new stats have come out. 1 in 2 people will get cancer, especially if you live into your 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there has to be a more effective way to provide care because there are over 300 patients a day who move through the hospital, and I am swamped. So I wrote a book called Beyond Surviving, Cancer and Your Spiritual Journey.
Beautiful title.
I procrastinated on that for 10 years, but...
I can relate.
It's part of what they said. I know. I'm doing the work. I wrote the book. And I thought I would just be proud if I finished that and my parents read it. But, you know, that voice from the spirit world comes and says, oh, no, David, this is just the beginning.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I was surprised. It's a new book. I found out I can write something decent. And in 10 weeks, it sold over 600 copies.
How fantastic. Congratulations to you.
Do you know how long it would take me to counsel 600 people?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm so grateful.
Yeah. And I imagine every single one of those people, as well as the thousands to come who will read it and who are certainly hearing about it right here, right now, are going to benefit and have those same tools to feel that same support. And more than anything is this tremendous compassion that just sort of oozes out of you and so much love and light. So...
It's the heart of the work.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful to the field of professional chaplaincy. I mean, we have a rigorous training program that is quite powerful in helping prepare you to be a spiritual counselor. So I know in Canada, it's the Canadian Association for Spiritual Care. There are several organizations here in the States. But it needs to go further.
Sure, it does.
Because we do not, in that training or in seminary, explore the nature of consciousness, near-death experiences. What exactly is non-local mind?
Ah, that's a term that's been thrown around a lot this particular conference, and yeah. I'm certain has touched you in the way it's touched me.
A beautiful, intelligent exploration of basic, wondrous spiritual principles.
That's right. Incredible. So I'm going to ask you for a message to give our listening audience before we close. And then I'm also going to promise our audience that you and I are going to speak again, because I have a sense that we have an awful lot to talk about, a lot to share, a lot to teach. And of course, it is this extension of who we are and our connection to heart and to source that brought us here together. So if you could give that message.
So my message, I want to direct this to cancer patients and their families.
Okay.
Don't waste the crisis. This has so much power to shift your priorities and help you heal your heart, address the unfinished love stories of your life, and get everything in order. Now, on the practical level, that means get your advanced directives done, do your wills, even if you're not sick. It doesn't mean you're giving up. It means you're taking charge. We want to keep you in the driver's seat. And if you are sick and facing cancer, know that survival rates are improving and beautiful, wondrous breakthroughs are coming, but you don't wait for those to do the homework. Focus on your love. If you doubt that God is out there, I want to propose to you that your spirituality is not determined so much by your belief as it is by the quality of your love, because God is love. So if you don't believe, don't worry about it. You focus on the love, and the love is going to hold you.
How beautiful that is.
Yeah.
How absolutely beautiful. And I love how empowering your message is.
Thank you.
That's really what it's all about.
I think I'm doing the work they sent me back to do.
I think you are too. It's beautiful. So again, if you could just quickly repeat your website
right.
So that people can find you and avail themselves of all those wonderful resources.
So please visit me at www.davidmaginley.com. That's M-A-G-I-N-L-E-Y. You can send me a note through that website.
Oh, good. So they can contact you directly.
You can link to my Facebook page.
Fabulous.
And you can even have a look at some very interesting photography, which I promise you is both tranquil and terrifying. So may that be an intriguing visit.
Yes. Oh, okay. Fantastic. And again, the name of your book
is called Beyond Surviving, Cancer and Your Spiritual Journey. You can get it online or through any bookstore.
How fantastic. Thank you so much again for being here.
Thank
oh my
you.
God, this has been incredible. And like I said, I promise our audience that you'll be hearing from David again. And we have an awful lot to explore together.
Marcy, it's an honor. Great surprise. Lovely to meet you.
Yes. Wonderful to meet you as well.
Okay.
And again, to our audience, this is Marcy Newman, the host of Heart Shift Radio. And you can listen to this podcast and so many others at www.HeartShiftCoach.com, and I'm sending you so many blessings of such great love and light and possibilities. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.